If you were stranded on a deserted island and you can only bring one type of food with you, what would it be?
Well, do I have a refrigerator?
No.
No, I don't. Okay, then probably a few cases of Kraft mac and cheese.
Oh, I love mac and cheese. That's a good answer. Well, my favorite food is sushi, but I have a feeling that it probably wouldn't hold very well, as you're saying with that fridge question. But maybe fried chicken. Yeah, I'll go with fried chicken.
You'd have to eat it fast, though. Any sauce with the chicken?
Oh, hot sauce, probably. Maybe buffalo sauce.
Buffalo sauce, okay, but no ketchup.
No, you know, I'm not really a fan of ketchup, which makes me really impressed with the subject of the headline we're looking into today. Elvis Francois is his name. He was stranded for 24 days in waters near Colombia, and he had to survive almost entirely on Heinz ketchup. Rescuers finally found him when they saw help carved into the hull of his boat, and now Heinz wants to buy him a new boat.
And it really is a fascinating story, but I've got to go back to this. You're not a fan of, who's not a fan of ketchup?
It's a Chicago thing. We don't let people put ketchup on hot dogs. I'll accept it for fries sometimes, but I'd still prefer like barbecue sauce.
Okay, well, no accounting for taste, I guess. This is Something Offbeat. I'm your host, Mike Rogers. That is one of our producers, Lauren Berry. And we wanted to know more about surviving dangerous situations. So we reached out to Josh Piven. He's co-author of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook and its numerous sequels, including the upcoming Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook Apocalypse. I think I interviewed you shortly after the first book came out. What was that, back in like 99?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it would have been 99. Yeah, so long time ago, but still at it.
It clearly worked out well. At first one, it sold like 10 million copies, going strong ever since. Are you surprised at the enduring strength of this franchise?
It is interesting. Yeah, I'm continually surprised. I'm not surprised that people are kind of still interested in the survival information that we provide, certainly based on current events and everything happening in the world. It does seem like kind of a perennial topic that people are interested in. So I'm not surprised about that. I am surprised, I think, that we kind of continually get new generations of readers that, you know, didn't necessarily know about the original book, but they've seen some of the spinoffs. And they still, you know, we branch out a little bit, but they continue to do pretty well. You know, people also like to read entertaining and humorous survival information. So we have that too. We don't play it too straight.
You covered a lot of ground over the years. I mean, everything from shark attacks to quicksand. And before we get to the new book, I got to mention quicksand, because that's something that's always fascinated me. What should I do the next time I fall in a pit of quicksand?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, quicksand actually is not, everybody thinks of the Lawrence of Arabia scene, you know, getting sucked down in the sand pit, but it actually can be mud or viscous liquid. It doesn't necessarily have to be sand. But, you know, the interesting thing is you can actually float on quicksand. It's kind of, when you struggle, it creates the suction effect, and that's what pulls you down further. So the experts actually say to try to get on your back if you can and float rather than struggle against it, and get a stick or something to put under you to help distribute your weight on the surface of the quicksand. And then you kind of like do the backstroke, as it were, to get out of the quicksand pit. But the main thing is not to struggle, which of course is what happens in that famous Lawrence of Arabia scene. And it just creates a vacuum and it just keeps sucking you down.
No thrashing around. Okay.
No thrashing, right, when you come across quicksand in Texas.
So this headline that we're looking into this week, I guess you've heard about this. This is that guy swept out to sea off the coast of Colombia, right?
Oh, yep.
So he hangs onto his capsized boat for 3.5 weeks. And survives on, it says here, he survived on garlic powder and ketchup. You've ever heard of anyone surviving on anything stranger than that?
Well, if only had a hot dog or some fries, you know, he would have had the whole package. Well, I mean, the hanging onto the boat, that's one of the first pieces of advice that we give, which is, you know, the boat is more buoyant than you are. So if there's any of the boat that's, you know, still there, whether it's capsized or not, don't abandon the boat. Right. The boat's obviously easier to see than a human in the water. So, if you know, the hole probably easier to see, you know, even if it's capsized. So that was good. Right. He didn't abandon his vessel. It's a pretty crazy story. But, you know, the main thing is at sea, you know, we discovered in our research is, you know, you can go a long time without food. I mean, potentially weeks, you know, if you're hydrated, right? So if you have enough water, or I mean, in this case, probably packeted ketchup is probably mostly water, you know, tomato sauce. It is sugary and salty, so that's probably not the healthiest option if you're adrift at sea. But if you can stay hydrated, you know, you can last a long time, assuming you're not attacked by sharks.
And that's the key, the hydration. I've heard it said that in order of importance, it's water, food, then shelter.
Well, I guess the answer is it depends, right? If you're in really cold water, then you're going to die of hypothermia, right? If you're Leo DiCaprio and Titanic, you're going to die of hypothermia before you have to worry about dehydration. So, but again, I mean, let's say you can, you know, get out of the water on your craft or whatever, you know, get most of your body out of the water. And you can, you know, you're not going to freeze to death. So then, you know, you have to worry about water. Where are you going to get water from? And we can go into the whole drinking your own urine if you want to go really into the weeds. But, you know, getting fresh water at sea is really difficult. But if you have emergency water, obviously you could do that. You can also capture rainwater if you have some sort of vessel, assuming that it rains wherever you are. Drinking seawater is a really bad idea, and you'll probably die of kidney failure in short order. So you definitely don't want to do that.
Yeah, you want to keep as much of your skin covered as possible, especially if you're out like this guy floating around in the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. Certainly sunburn could be very painful. You're not likely to die of sunburn, you know, in a couple of days. Obviously, you need to protect yourself from the sun. You don't want to get too hot either, right? You could have heat stroke. You could go that way too. So I don't know how much shelter he had on his craft.
Well, the boat was flipped, right? So I guess he could have gotten underneath it to protect himself from the sun.
Or crawled in, right? I mean, if there was an air pocket under there, right? And he just wasn't, just like in the water. I think in the Caribbean, sharks would definitely be a concern for me, in warmer waters. Maybe he was able to scavenge some things from inside the boat. That could be possible. I don't know how many ketchup packets he actually had. He must have had a lot.
You know, regardless, 3.5 weeks is pretty impressive. I don't care what you got to eat out there.
That is pretty impressive, but I wonder how many days it takes before you're like, God, ketchup again?
Now, Lauren, my worst case scenario is drowning, which I've actually almost done twice in my life. And I'm a good swimmer. It was just more stupidity than anything. Here's a pro tip. Do not jump into Lake Huron with sandals on and think you're going to be able to swim back to the dock.
That sounds scary, Mike. Well, for me, when I was a kid, my family took this trip to Arizona and we very briefly got lost in the desert. Ever since then, deserts have pretty much just really creeped me out. They're so quiet and there's no water anywhere. I would very much like to avoid getting lost in one ever again. And you know, as a city person, anytime I'm like lost in the wilderness or I don't think I can get to like a McDonald's really fast, I get a little scared.
And the snakes.
Yes. But really, I'm more afraid of being far away from a cheeseburger, to be honest.
But no ketchup.
No ketchup on it, no.
Do you have a personal worst case scenario situation? It's at the top of your list. It would just freak you out.
You know, actually, a lot of people have asked me that. I think, you know, the kind of the Robinson Crusoe, you know, Tom Hanks stranded on a desert island. I think that would be pretty difficult. You know, I think even if you could survive, not knowing what your chances of rescue are, could, you know, and you were by, assuming you were by yourself, I think that would be pretty depressing. I think, you know, obviously I think about the shark attacks and the bear attacks, and certainly not a great way to go, you know, either one of those. Personally, the air crashes are something that I think about only because, you know, it's typically, you know, something is going to happen and it's not going, you know, it's like unless it's some catastrophic, like in air, you know, bomb or something like that, or there's a huge, you know, instant destruction of a plane. I think that would be, you know, pretty frightening if you knew it, you know, a plane was going down and there wasn't going to be, you know, you had time to think about it and there wasn't much chance to do anything. That way, I think that would be pretty frightening. Yeah.
What's the worst case scenario you have been in?
Oh, geez. Sure. Both my rotator cuffs during COVID. That was pretty sucky. Trying to get surgery at the beginning of deep COVID was not something I ever want to repeat. That was difficult. But that's certainly not life-threatening. You know, I've had some close calls traveling in various places, crime and things of that nature. I mean, I'm not Bear Grylls out there or, you know, the cast of Alone out in the wilderness. So it hasn't been that extreme. Currently, the drain line on my washing machine is leaking. So that's about as bad as it gets at the moment. But, you know, we are living in pretty safe times.
A little over a decade ago, Harvard University psychologist Steven Pinker argued that we are living in the most peaceful era of history. However, that was before the pandemic, the war in Ukraine. And this January, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists announced that the doomsday clock, their doomsday clock, it's closer to global catastrophe than it has ever been. Since you started this, have we become more anxious as a species, more easily rattled, more nervous about these sorts of things?
Yeah, right. Doom scrolling has come into the lingo. Historically speaking, we're living in probably the safest time in human history. Now, maybe not if you live in Ukraine, but in general, kind of on the global scale, you know, things are pretty safe, right? I mean, like lifespans are pretty long and infant mortality is pretty low. So, you know, in that sense, you wonder, you know, do people just, you know, need something to worry about, or are they looking to see if they could survive things because they know they probably won't have to? So there's that. But then there's also like COVID. These things are real, right? I mean, there's lots of vectors now for diseases, viruses that emerge. They get around the globe before you can stop them. And, you know, I think now people kind of feel like they're living on edge. You know, things are normal to the next, you know, Greek letter variant that comes out. And then they start worrying about, well, what if it's worse, right? What if the mortality rate is higher? What if it's more like Ebola, you know, rather than the flu, right? I do think people, they think about it and they worry about it, rightly or wrongly.
So the new book, is it out already or when is it out?
No, Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook, Apocalypse. Yeah, we went there. Comes out in end of October, just before Halloween, appropriately enough.
And what kind of ground are you going to cover in this one?
We always wanted to do a climate change book. So we were thinking about how to do that. And then, you know, of course, COVID came along and changed everything. And, you know, so we had this global catastrophe in terms of this contagion. And then, of course, we also have the wars going on. We have climate caused flooding and fires and sea level rise. So we kind of combined it all into this compendium of kind of apocalyptic situations. So we do a lot of climate survival things. We did cover the zombies. We covered the alien invasion. What if you have to mate with an alien? How do you tell if the alien is a lizard? How do you pilot the alien craft? So we had a little fun with that. But we also do things like rebuilding, you know, basically how to survive if civilization is wiped out. So whether that's, you know, bartering or building a shelter, having to, you know, trade gold or pack a go bag in 30 minutes, and then how to rebuild society, how to kind of get people in your clan, or how to deal with the clans that are attacking your clan. So kind of some of the more wild post-apocalyptic situations that we could think of. But there's a lot of material out there.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Chris Blake. Original music by Myron Kaplan and editorial support from Cooper Mall. And to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app or Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, we'd love to hear about it. Send it to us at somethingoffbeat@audacy.com. Thank you.